Blog Talk Radio.
And we're live.
Okay. This is Alan Steinfeld for Portals to Ascension Radio. Thank you all for listening. Today we have an amazing guest, really someone who's becoming a leader in the field of awakening, Teresa Yanaros. She is going to be talking about the divine frequency and the spiritual awakening that's happening on the planet. Teresa, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much, Alan, for having me. How are you doing today?
I am great. So this program is really about, it's sponsored and produced by Portal to Ascension. So we are, I feel, in an ascension frequency. And I think you're talking to people who are just coming into that awareness and this awakening. And so can you talk a little bit about your background? How did you come to your spiritual awakening and your influence in people around you? Can you share that?
Absolutely. I would love to. Yeah, people wake up in different ways. There are different triggers that cause people to have to reassess their belief systems. Every day we, especially from childhood, we're learning, we're growing, and then at a certain point you become an adult, and then something can happen that can spark this awakening in you that makes you realize, you know what, maybe everything that I learned before, I need to go back and I need to reassess it. So I have a couple of things from my childhood that were just ingrained in me that allowed me to be a little bit more open just in general, and I'd love to tell you a little bit about it. I was actually, my family was stationed in England, in Suffolk, England, when the Rendlesham Forest incident happened. I'm not sure if you...
I do know that. 1980, it was December 26th, 27th, and 28th. There were three evenings of UFO sightings at the Bentwaters RAF base there in Rendlesham Forest area. So, yes, I do know very much about that. I've met some of the people involved in that case, and I've met lots of people who have written books about that. But tell me, what was your connection to the Rendlesham Forest incident?
Oh, amazing summary there. Yes, my dad was stationed at RAF Woodbridge. That's Royal Air Force Woodbridge. There were twin bases there. There was Bentwaters and Woodbridge. My dad was
A U.S. base and a U.K. base joined together. Yes, that's right.
Yes, they were twin NATO air bases, and they were being leased to the United States Air Force at the time. And what was interesting, too, is that my mom was working there. She was not active duty, but she worked there in the office, so she could look out her window, and she could see the fence and then Rendlesham Forest. So the night that this happened, two men went out. There was a ship there that landed in the Rendlesham Forest. And you can the whole story's online, and there are documentaries and all kinds of stuff. It's on Ancient Aliens. But the interesting part and my connection to it is that my dad goes into work the next day, and the entire office is just in an uproar. And it was really interesting because it's just a part of my upbringing. I have two sisters and a brother, and we were just raised in a household where we knew that there was something going on that was more than what meets the eye.
Did your father witness any of the craft that landed, or no, he did not?
He did not, unfortunately, witness it himself, but he did work there on base with all the people that did. So
I was just wondering, were you born at the time? Were you around?
I was not. I was born in 1987, so I came along seven years later. And if you can imagine what this might look like for my family, my parents, this is like some very deep experience that they had with everybody there living in Suffolk at the time. And so this changed them. So if you think about the DNA that's passed through, now they're having children and they're passing these concepts on to their children. So we were raised in a household where it was very much so open to the concepts of ETs, and not just that, but just secret governmental programs, which inspired me from a young age to look behind the surface, look underneath the surface, and really try to get to the truth of what was underneath.
But can I just ask you, sorry to interrupt, but do you mind sharing a little bit of what your father said, because you really don't get this firsthand information that you have there. So I'd love to hear the kind of stories and information your father would tell the family, if you don't mind.
Well, my dad is obviously, you know, he has a top secret clearance, so there was not really much that he could tell us. But I can tell you that it was really funny because us as kids, we'd try to get all kinds of stuff out of him that didn't work, right? He would make jokes. But the reality is we could see that there was something more going on because we heard the story, right? So the stories that were out there that were open, the way he talked about it, the way he said, you know, this was something that occurred that was hushed up. We didn't, you know, we weren't able to know a whole lot about it. There weren't a lot of answers for us. And the people that were talking about it, it immediately was hushed up on base to where they weren't allowed to talk about it. So it was more like the lack of information was what was presented. So the truth being occulted was the evidence itself that there was something more underneath the surface, if that makes sense. And then also, my parents were really into the X-Files and Quantum Leap and, you know, science fiction and shows like this that would open things up to discuss concepts that were supernatural and things like that.
Right, right, right. So your father did acknowledge the existence of UFOs and it was just part of your family upbringing, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, he was always a believer. We've all been believer. I would say that my mom is maybe my mom hasn't come around, but you know I do what I do, so she gets to talk about it a lot. Whether or not she believes it, we'll see what happens. But
well, that's a really interesting. So go ahead, continue. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to really because it's still a mystery of what went on there, and it's still top secret, and a lot of the truth has not gotten out about Rendlesham Forest. It's never been acknowledged by the government, and you know, John Burroughs has a radio show with Linda Moulton Howe on Phenomenal Radio. So anyway, it's out there. It's happened, you know, 1980, but there's still a lot to be known. So anyway, continue with your story. Please.
And you're totally right, Alan, and I think that what's so important about these stories like the Rendlesham Forest incident where it was so many people that were there, so many people that saw this up in the sky, and this is just one incident of many, and now we have the internet where we can all get together and say, hey, we were all there. It's sort of getting out into the open now where people are being able to kind of shake hands and say, hey, I see you over there. I know you were there too. When I started talking about the Rendlesham Forest incident on my YouTube channel, people started coming to me from all over the world saying, hey, that's so cool that you're talking about this. You know, my dad was stationed there too. And it's so great to be able to like find other people across the world now with the internet so that we can start having these conversations. And it's kind of getting out of the hands of, oh, hush, hush, let's keep this, you know, under wraps. People are being able to like have an avenue to speak about these things. So I agree with you, Alan. I think it's great that people are able to talk about this stuff. When we moved, I'll shift now from Rendlesham. We moved to Virginia in around the year of 1992. I don't know if you've heard of the Seton Miracles, but this is another thing that happens. And
I
happened
have not heard of the Seton Miracles. No, tell me. Yeah, that sounds great.
This is a really interesting story. So this actually took place at my church that I went to, and my priest was giving a sermon, and all of the statues of Mary inside of the church began to cry, and 300 people witnessed this event. I was not there. My family was not there. Unfortunately, again, we just like had a close encounter, but we weren't actually there. But this didn't just happen one time. It happened many times. He was actually in Time Magazine. And it would follow him. These miracles would follow him around. So when he would go to another church and give a sermon, the statues of Mary would cry. So
what year was that, would you say? What year?
1992.
Thing that would make the statues cry?
Father James Bruce is his name. So if you want to look him up, you can look up James, J-A-M-E-S, and then Bruce, B-R-U-C-E. And what's interesting about Father James Bruce is that he would come to our house and like eat dinner with us and stuff. So we were close with him, and he was also experiencing stigmata, which are the wounds of Jesus Christ. And
Did you see the stigmata?
I don't remember about seeing that. I'm sure that my mom and dad did. There are pictures of this online. I can even send that to you sometime. Wow. But yeah, there are pictures of his hands and stuff. And we were young, so I'm sure that the stigmata stuff, I'm thinking my parents were probably trying to keep away from us because I don't know, like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Sort of like weird for us, a small child.
Right, blood coming out of someone's hands for no reason. Yeah, that is weird. But I do believe it. I do think that happens in lots of places, miracles like that. So I have no doubt that did happen, especially around people who are at an elevated level of consciousness. Did you feel that about James Bruce, that he was an evolved being?
I was so young, but I'll say that my parents were extremely close with him, and the way that they talk about him, they definitely said that he was super young when this happened too. I think he was like 25 or 26 when these miracles were occurring. So he was very much so tapped in. I remember being around him, and I remember him coming to our house and eating dinner with us and feeling a calmness, and he blessed the house and he said a blessing over our family. And it was really amazing. Another thing about, you were talking about belief, and I talk about belief a lot. And to me, how I sort of talk about belief, I say there's an interplay or an exchange between evidence and faith. So I wanted to talk for a second about belief in that regard, because there was something that happened with Father James Bruce that my sister witnessed. One of her very close friends at school, his mother was in the stages of cancer. She was dying of cancer. And she went to Father James Bruce, and she was healed. He healed her. And so this had such a huge effect on my sister and her friend and the entire class and the community, that they were able to see someone that was in the last stages of cancer, dying of cancer, and then the evidence showed, well, now she's healed. What does that mean? Well, it means that we have faith that something else is happening, something seriously interesting is going on here, you know?
Well, that's not about belief. That is about proof. I mean, that's beyond belief. I mean, I think, you know, belief is just conjecture. But when you see it, that's evidence of something. That's knowledge, experience. That's what I think. But,
right.
Yeah.
And I see what you're saying, and I do agree with you as well. The way that I describe it is belief is an interplay. I don't say belief is evidence. I say belief, when you believe in something, when you really believe in something, usually there's going to be some sort of evidence there, because in order to really lend over your spirit and go, I fully believe in this, usually there's going to be some element of evidence there, and there's an element of faith. So it's, I would say, the interplay or the exchange between the evidence that you see to suggest something and then the faith that you have in it as well, because there's the known and then there's the mystery.
Right. Is Father Bruce still around? Is he still alive? What happened to him?
He, after all of this was said and done, I think he just went back to the country, because he came from the country. I think he grew up on a farm, and then he moved back. So I'm pretty sure he's living in Virginia. That's my guess. But I don't know. I was actually talking to my mom about that the other day, because I talked a little bit about Father James Bruce at my talk at Conscious Life Expo, and we were wondering about that. It would be cool to get in touch with him and see what he's up to and get an interview with him.
Do you think it was too much publicity for him, that he was a shy person and didn't really want the exposure? Is that what happened, you think?
It might have been, because he was very quiet. He was very humble, you know, like most priests are. So I think that you're probably onto something there, because I can only imagine how that must feel when you're having these mystical experiences. That in itself is so epic and like otherworldly, that you're dealing with that on a soul level, and then having to like now handle that on a public level, I can only imagine that would be very hard to deal with.
Right. But anyway, these incidences really influence your development and spiritual outlook, is what I think you're saying here, right?
Yes. So just to give you kind of a basis, that's the basis. And then I became obsessed with what magic was. I'm like, what is this that's beyond that we're experiencing, that we're seeing evidence of? So I became very interested in that. And then I became very interested in the truth being occulted and needing to be uncovered. So by the time I went to college, the first class I took when I was 16, I took an English course, and we had to write a paper. And the first paper I wrote was that we needed to critique the images and messages that we were receiving in the mainstream media. So I went to school. I was super into journalism my whole life. I mean, this goes back all the way to, I don't know, 5 or 6. And by the time I was 16, I was like, I was all in. So I get my degree in journalism. I went into the tech industry for a while. And then around the age of 25 or so, I kind of looked around me and I'm like, you know what? I think I'm meant for more. And there was just something like missing. It was like everything was great. I had a great job. I was living in Santa Barbara. Everything was awesome. I'm on the beach. Everything was cool. But then I'm looking around and I'm going, you know what? I just don't think that the road stops here for me. I think that I need something more. So I quit my job. I sold everything I owned. I moved across the country, and I went through this huge awakening experience, and I wrote a book about it called What is Magic? And
where'd you move to? I'm just curious.
Oh, Gypsy Life, Alan. I've moved so many different places. So after Santa Barbara, I moved to Austin, Texas, and then after that, I moved to Dallas, Texas, and then I went out to Rhode Island. I was living in Providence, which was really cool. And now I'm actually in Virginia, but I move quite frequently.
But what was the thing that woke you up to the spiritual consciousness?
That's a great question. I love this question. So when I think I was 25 at the time, my dad sent me a book. And the name of the book was Journey of Souls by Dr. Michael Newton. Have you heard of, I'm sure you've heard of this book.
I've heard of it, but I have not read it. No, I have not read it.
Cool. I'll give you a quick synopsis of what Journey of Souls is. So this doctor was regressing patients into past lives to help heal trauma. And then he realized that he could regress them into the space between. So after they would die in a past life, he would notice that they were still able to connect to this hypnotherapy session. And they were experiencing the life in between, from after death of one life into before being born in another life. So he spent 10 years regressing patients and then compiling case studies. And then what he found after 10 years of research was that most people, I mean, they would use different words here and there, but they were experiencing essentially the same thing. And so he released this in a book.
Which was what exactly? Can you tell me what happens between lives?
Oh, yeah, it's really cool. They basically talk about when you leave your body, you can look at your body, you see your body, and then you feel this sense of being kind of pulled away. You can stay with your body. It depends on, like, your level of soul, which he goes all into, like, different soul levels, soul groups, and things like that. But you feel this urge to be pulled away from this realm. So you, at a certain point, travel away, and you go into this space where everybody is, it's sort of like a, how would I describe it, like a Grand Central Station for souls, and then everybody's being pulled to this light, and then you're sorted out into your soul groups. And what this means is that when you come into this life as you, Alan, you've lived many lives, but you have certain contracts that you've chosen to come into this life in a certain capacity. There is obviously free will, but there are certain things that you can try to plant, right, so that you have, you experience synchronicities and things like that. But you have people or other souls that you choose to incarnate with, and they will play certain roles in your life. So he talked all about this and these experiences that people are having with their soul groups and then how they choose what they want to do. And then they're reflecting on their past lives. Like, you go up basically after you die, and then you're going, okay, what did I learn from that life? And then you work with your group to learn lessons, integrate those lessons, and then you move forward. And he breaks it down in a way that he shows the different levels of souls. And then after you get to the really high level of soul, you stop incarnating. I mean, he only had like two or three case studies there that he was able to pull from because it was very rare. But then they would basically go up. His thought was that they would continue to move on to the next thing, whatever that was. But once you learned all the lessons you could from Earth, then you would move on to the next level and go on to wherever happens next.
So there's a state of awakening where you experience the totality of the human realm, and then you evolve to the next phase of existence, whatever that may be, you're saying, I think.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So you read this book, and something clicked for you when you read this?
Yes, so my dad sent me this book, and I started reading this book, and about halfway through, I started having spontaneous out-of-body experiences. Now, I didn't know what an out-of-body experience was at the time, but I was standing next to my body at night, and I'm looking down, and there's a silver cord going from my solar plexus down to my body, and I'm thinking, what is going on? I look around, and it looked like everything was light. It looked like there was maybe sunlight pouring in the windows, but that didn't make sense to me. And then I realized, wait a second, there is an inherent quality of light within every object that I can see right now. And this had a huge effect on me, and then I was like, wait a second. And then I started to feel like I was light. Everything was light. I had no pain, no soreness in my muscles. Everything was light. And then I could float. So I floated through the door, and I floated down the hallway, and I'm standing now in my living room, and I can see, I can, like, zoom in on the couch, and I can see all the filaments of fabric in the couch. And it was so beautiful. It was like taking my breath away.
Mm-hmm. And you
and
didn't
then,
realize you were out of your body, or did you say, hey, I'm having an out of body, or just thought this was your existence? I mean, did you, I guess you weren't really thinking at the time, right?
Well, no, I can answer that question. I can definitely answer that question. I was standing next to my body, so I'm out of my body. I'm in my, like, light body. I'm in my astral body, and I'm looking down. I see this cord going down to my body, sleeping in bed. Now, that told me that there was something weird going on. Now, at the time, I didn't know if it was a dream or not, but it felt so real. The experience was so tangible. It was like my senses were so heightened that it was like even higher of an existence. It was like when you're awake and you're feeling vibrant, it was like that times 100. So I felt so awake that it was like I knew something unexplainable was happening. Let me tell you how I knew, because I'm not to the end of the story yet.
Tell me.
I'm in the living room, and I told you the part about the couch, but then I go into the kitchen. Now, this is the part when I knew I was out of body, because I look down, and here are my dishes that I left out, that I had forgotten that I had left out the night before. At that moment, when I saw the dishes sitting there, I realized I'm actually standing in my kitchen right now, because there's no way I didn't even know about these dishes, so this can't be a dream. And then that's when I was so excited that I went back to my body and I woke up.
Wow, that's great. You know, I liked what you said about everything being heightened as a state of mind, because what I find when I talk to people with out of body and my own out of body experience is there's a shift in consciousness. It's not ordinary reality that we're experiencing. There's something different about the nature of the mind in those experiences. So that's what I found.
Yes, I totally agree with you, because I would say there are different levels of consciousness, and when you're having an out-of-body experience like the one I described, it's you are expanded. You're at this higher level where you can actually you have superpowers, essentially. I was able to zoom my vision in and see things that I would have never been able to see with my human eyes. It was like everything was brighter and more vibrant and more real than it was before.
What do you think it was about that book that activated this power, in a sense, for you?
That's a great question. The reason why this happened to me, in my opinion, is because I was raised Catholic, and then I had a lot of questions that I was not able to find answers to when I was around the age of like 18 or 19. So I became very frustrated with the church, and I was reading the catechism, and I was like, there are things here that I'm just not resonating with. And there were questions that I had that, and I think it was because the timing was not right, because I kind of stepped away from everything. I went about my way. I graduated from college. I got a couple of years of professional experience under my belt. And I think that this was the time. It was the right time. It was divine timing for me to learn about reincarnation, because that alone, that topic expanded my mind in a way that had never occurred before. And all of a sudden, these things started to click into place in my head, where everything started to come into alignment, where it was like, okay, this actually makes a lot of sense. If there's suffering in the world, why is there suffering? You know, why would someone choose to live a life where they only live for 2 or 3 years? And what about that soul? You know, there are so many questions that you can have, that when you bring in the concept of reincarnation and you start learning about karma and you start learning about the system itself and divine law, it really starts to expand the consciousness out to where you feel empowered. You feel like, okay, I have a purpose here. I have a specific purpose that I chose. I have soul contracts that I've signed. I'm here for a reason. And I think that's why my soul became activated.
So did you have more than one experience, out-of-body experience, when you were reading that book, or just that one?
I did. This was just the beginning, Alan, of like a series of really crazy events in my life that from that moment have just continued to occur. It's kind of funny, but I actually wrote a book about it because it was so significant that my friends were like, Teresa, you need to write this stuff down. This is like, you have to tell this story. And so I started writing a book. I moved to Rhode Island. I was maybe like 3 or 4 pages into the book, And I was like, kind of iffy. I'm like, should I finish this book? Should I even make this a book? Should I even do this? You know, I was kind of second guessing myself. Well, that night was actually the first night that I was visited by a, there are different words to describe this, but I say spirit guide. I don't know. You could call it an angel. You could call it, you know, an energetic presence, someone that's help, you know, a soul that's helping you along, whatever you want to call this, a saint. There are so many different names, but all I know is I had an incredibly intense experience with a soul guide that
well,
came to me.
Tell me about that. Tell me what he looked or they looked like and what they said to you. I mean, that's very interesting. So, yeah, please share.
Yes, I was. So I was laying in bed and I was meditating. I had my eyes closed, and because the cars were really loud on the street where I had just moved to Rhode Island, and I was frustrated because I couldn't concentrate on sleeping. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to meditate. So I close my eyes and I'm picturing this orb in front of me, like a silver orb, and I'm just putting all of my thoughts into this orb, and I'm putting myself into this very calm state of mind, and I'm breathing. And I'm breathing, and then I don't know if I fell asleep or what, but I don't care if this is a dream or not. It's this was so real that let's call it a dream. I'm shooting forward through the ether, and the reason why I say ether, because I know this is a loaded word, is because it was completely black, and I didn't have a body, but my soul essence was shooting forward through this space. And all of a sudden, there's another soul. I can sense, I can't see it, but I can sense that I'm in front of another soul. So now I'm suspended in blackness and I am having this interface with another entity in front of me. And it would almost be like, Alan, if you forgot your mom or something, you had amnesia, and then all of a sudden you, all your memories came back. So all your memories come flooding back and you are there with your mother. It would be like that experience, like when you're greeting someone again for the first time in a really long time, and it's like all of your memories have come back, and you know this person extremely well. And
wow,
that was what I felt. It was very overwhelming. And what was interesting is that our interface was telepathic. And what I mean by that is that I could sense, and I'm just going to use the pronoun he for all intents and purposes, but I could sense that he could sense what I was going through, and he was being patient to allow me to go through the emotions that I was experiencing.
Well, did that change you in some fundamental way?
It absolutely did. After this experience, and that there's a whole lot more to it, but after this experience with this spirit guide, I have had two or three other experiences in astral travel where I've met up with this same guide. But that particular moment, yes, to answer your question, it changed my life. When I woke up the next day, I don't know what changed in me, Alan, but I wrote that book and it took me 2 months and I turned around and I had written 550 pages.
Wow, that's great. But could you just say how it changed you? And do you feel like this being is always with you?
That's a great question. You're like a really fun interviewer. I'm having so much fun having this conversation with you. Yes. Yeah, it changed my life because I felt this very strong connection to souls that are not incarnated here on this planet. It was like I was going through this enormous discovery period where I was able to connect to these souls that are basically helping us and guiding us. And I think that a lot of people in this community have connections to these spiritual entities, these guiding forces, these nurturing, loving forces that are there showing us the way, demonstrating their love, and just getting to experience that really connects you to the higher realms in a way that allows you to go about your day and your life in a way that it gives you self-confidence in what you're doing.
Right, but is that presence always with you? Is that guide like, could you like access the knowledge from that being?
I feel like I have protection around me all the time. I definitely do, and I know that this comes from, you know, just being born here. My whole experience, I've felt very divinely protected. I've been very spiritual my whole life, and as far as this particular being, it comes and goes. I would say that I don't know. I'm going to say I don't know to your question because I haven't necessarily tried to channel this being. I just let it be, and whenever the being comes in my astral travel experiences or in my dreams, then I greet it. So it's not like I call upon my soul guides in waking life. But there are times during meditation that I will. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. There's times in meditation. Tell me.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are times in meditation that, you know, I will call upon my angels and my guides to be present, to protect me, and, you know, when I'm opening up my mind to insights or whatever that looks like, if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, definitely, because I think, you know, some people are more connected than others, and for some reason you've established this connection. I wonder why you think you have had that, you know. I mean, maybe you're just ready, maybe you're just more evolved, but do you feel like there's a reason or a mission that comes along with that awakening?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like it's funny that you, this is kind of weirdly synchronistic, Alan, that you're asking me this today, because I've been having a lot of downloads today, especially. I feel like I am definitely following a narrow path. I feel like I've been divinely guided my whole life, but especially since this awakening moment that you and I are discussing right now, the path has unfolded for me in this way that has been extremely humbling, and I feel like I'm sort of flying by the seat of my pants. But yes, I will say that I've had some really interesting synchronistic experiences. I've had downloads, some really intense downloads full of information that I didn't understand at the time that I had to unpack later that I'm still unpacking. So I don't know why it's happening to me, but I do know that I have to get this information out. Like the book, What is Magic? I had to write it, and I know a lot of people are reaching out to me now, and I just released it 3 weeks ago, and people are loving it so far, and people are having a lot of wonderful experiences with it, but I'm not done. I'm just getting started, and I have so much more that I'm going to be doing, and I have a lot that I'm working on right now. It's every day. Every day I'm following the path.
But can you talk about the synchronistic experiences? Because those are definitely signs from the universe that you're on the right path. So tell me about those.
Yes. Oh my gosh, synchronicity. There are so many. I can tell you a little bit. I can tease a little bit about what I have going on right now that's really kind of
yes.
crazy.
Yes.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. How do I want to start? Because there's so much to unpack here. Okay, I'm going to start with my first channeling experience. So,
okay.
After I wrote the book, and I've never talked about this publicly, so you're getting some brand new content here.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. After I wrote the book, What is Magic? It was maybe a week after I finished writing the book, and this was 2 years ago. It took me 2 years to go through the editing process and all of that. So I started reading a book on channeling, and I wish I could remember the name of it, but I can't. I started reading a book on channeling, and I had never done this before because
I think
it was
a book called Opening to Channel. Is that, was it that one? Opening to Channel.
It is exactly
anyway.
That book. You are
oh,
correct.
Okay. That is a great really cool. book for a lot of people who want to start channeling. I know a lot of people have started accessing those realms with that book. So yes, go ahead. Tell me what happened.
Wow. That's yeah. really cool that you knew the name of the book. Yes. So I was very averse to this because, like I keep saying, I was raised Catholic. So it was like, a lot of this was dogma, like, no, you cannot do this, divination, bad, all this stuff, bad. You can't even look into it, all this kind of stuff, divination, just shut you up, right? So I come out on the other end of all this, and I'm having these incredibly mystical experiences that at this point in my experience, like, I can't really refute that what I'm going through is real, right? So,
Can you tell me what's, I know we're getting a little off the point, but what were those mystical experiences that were so incredible? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so when I was in the middle of writing What is Magic, I found tarot. So I started reading tarot, and I found that I had, like, this insane connection to it. Like, I don't know why, but it was, like, overnight I was having these incredible tarot readings. And then and this is all in my book, but I went to the airport. My flight gets canceled. I'm sitting in a restaurant, and people start sitting down across from me for tarot readings because I had pulled out a tarot deck, and people, I guess, thought that I was giving tarot readings. I had only been reading tarot for like 5 or 6 days at this point. And then I'm having these incredible experiences where people are in tears, and it was beyond me. I think that it's because of my connection to archetypes. And this is what I'll be talking about at Portal to Ascension, but I have this incredible connection. I don't know if it's because I'm an artist and a musician and all of this, but I see tarot and I see these concepts as archetypes, and then you use that to pull through and channel information from the collective consciousness.
Right, right, right. No, I get that. I get that. No, I think tarot is a very powerful tool. So then talk about the channeling stuff. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I'm glad you asked that follow-up question because that actually leads in better. So because of all the tarot stuff that I had going on in my life, it was sort of showing me or demonstrating that there's a whole lot that you can connect to as far as the collective consciousness. So I started researching this kind of thing where I'm like, okay, there is a field of potentiality and I can pull information from this field. And that's quite literally what I'm doing. And I started like researching about tarot a lot. And then I come out on the other end and I'm like, maybe I should try channeling because I don't know if maybe this would be something that I could do. So I started reading Open to Channel. And I was maybe 5 or 6 pages into the book when I thought, you know what, I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to try it, and we're going to see what happens. And what ended up happening was I had this intense channeling experience that I think I'm actually going to do a presentation on it at ESETI conference in July, and because it's quite amazing. But in this experience, I had filled up a bathtub. I don't know if you've ever – have you channeled before?
Yeah, I've accessed that. Yeah, yes, yes.
So
I mean, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. So you filled up a bathtub.
I filled up a bathtub, and I had like a candle where it was just really dim lighting. It was over in the corner. And then I put myself into a meditative state, and then through breathing and focus, and what I basically did was I focused on the water. And what happened was the light in the room started to dim. And it was like at that moment, that was when my mind kind of moved into that deep theta that you and I were talking about, like that heightened awareness state. That's where I was. So I'm looking at the water, and then it looks like someone takes like a stick and they're like drawing in the water so that I can see what they're drawing. And I see a constellation, a very specific constellation. And I took astronomy in college, so I knew what constellation it was, but I didn't remember the name of it. And I was just thought, okay, I'll look it up later, you know, after the session. But the constellation, I wish that you could see with my hands, but the lines came in and focused on one star, and then that star lit up. And so I was like, I'm going to have to look that up later. I wonder what star that is. And then it shows me the DNA spiral and then what looks like a lemniscate or the infinity symbol. And
wow.
After... yeah, it was really cool. So then I'm sitting there, and then nothing happens for another 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm like, okay, this is probably over now. I pull myself out of the meditation, and then I go to my computer. Well, first, I draw the symbols, and I have this. I wrote it. I drew them down, and I emailed them to myself, so I have this. And when I went and I looked it up, I found that the constellation was Taurus, and the star was Aldebaran.
And so what does that mean?
Well, it was interesting because at this point in my journey, like I hadn't really done much research into any of the extraterrestrial deep side of stuff where it's like, oh, these are the different star families and this star, these beings come from. I didn't have any real interest in any of that. I mean, I was obviously interested in UFOs and ETs, but not on that deeper level. I hadn't really gone that path or done any of that research because, you know, I was writing a book and I was into reincarnation. My research was taking me other places up until that point, if that makes sense. So there's so much, there's only so much time and there's so much to research, but I found at that time Maria Orsich. So I
saw her.
Maria
Orsich? Who is Maria Orsich?
She is the one that in the early 1900s was channeling from Aldebaran in Germany, and she was allegedly channeling ancient Templar script where they were pulling, I think, plans for an extraterrestrial starship. And that was in 1919, and then she disappeared in 1945.
She disappeared?
Yeah, she disappeared.
What do you mean? Where'd she go? I mean, she just, like, vanished?
But I don't know. I mean, like, that's a big question. Was she killed because she had a power that people didn't want her to have? Was she kidnapped? Was she, you know, did she flee? Was she abducted? I mean, there are so many answers, potential answers to that question, but I think it's fascinating to think about. I don't know where she went. It'd be cool to know.
So anyway, you started to connect with these star systems, you're saying?
Well, at that point, I think that I was so freaked out that I was just like, this is weird. I'm over this. And I'm summarizing here. But I basically put it behind me because I was like, you know what? I need to focus on getting my book published. I have so much that I need to do. I think I was also a little bit scared, to be completely honest, Alan, because I had such an intense experience and it was my very first time channeling. So there was something inside me, and I know that this was like I had to get over a lot of fear coming into this industry, because being raised Catholic, there's this, you have a lot to reconcile is what I'm getting at. And at that point in my path, I had not worked through getting over the fear that comes with leaning into these mystical experiences. So I sort of shut myself off at that time. But all of this came
back
up.
So you had this great opening. Can you tell me specifically what kind of messages you got from this, you know, what actually came to you? What was the actual information?
The information was, I wish that I had, well, it's funny because I've never talked about this before, so if I had it prepared,
generally,
I could pull it up.
You don't have to give me the specifics, but I just want to know what was so intense and freaked you out so much.
Well, okay. What was weird was that it was basically talking about the key to DNA. It was something about extraterrestrial DNA related to human DNA, and then it was the key to infinity or expansion of the soul. And it had something to do with Aldebaran. So what that meant to me, in a nutshell, was that I was asking myself, am I really channeling some extraterrestrials from Aldebaran that are trying to, like, show me how to unlock DNA and evolve?
Uh-huh.
That freaked me out.
Okay. And what if you were channeling extraterrestrials who told you how to evolve? I mean, I guess that's kind of weird, but I would say you probably were. So you shut down and then you opened up again. Is that what happened?
Yeah. So that was 2 years ago. And, I mean, I'm looking at the email now. While you were just talking, I pulled it up. But
right.
I can read part of it because I said, how does all this fit together? Well, maybe this is a message from the people of this other world. Maybe not. But it's not the first time I've heard that our DNA is the key to our immortality, i.e. infinity. Our DNA holds encoded information about the entire human race since the beginning of time. Maybe it was a message of understanding. Another soul is trying to send me a message saying that they know about us and want us to know about them.
Yes, that sounds great. That's a really great channeling, I would say. Beautiful. But it freaked you out.
But it freaked me out. And then I, went about my merry way. What essentially happened then, and this is where it gets really fun, I started a YouTube channel. I thought, you know what, I'm going to be publishing a book soon. I'm going to start a YouTube channel. I'm going to break out into the public eye. I'm going to start talking about this stuff. And so I started Divine Frequency, which is my project now. And this was – go ahead.
No, go ahead. I mean, I just want to know more about Divine Frequency. But, yeah, so tell me –
Yes. So I started Divine Frequency, and I started this YouTube channel, started talking about astral travel and things like that, you know, consciousness and things like that. And then after, when was it? I guess this was maybe like 6 months into my YouTube channel, I went through a karmic quick burn, and I went through like a huge dark night of the soul. I went through a divorce. My best friend died. A lot of things. I could tick them off. You know, my sister's apartment burned down. It was like basically everything just fell apart within, you know, a month. But that's how it happens in our world, right?
I guess. And why do you think, I mean, if you could come up with a reason why that all happened to you at that moment, was it an acceleration, a wake-up call? What do you think that was all about?
I was being activated. I was going through a huge shift in consciousness, and I was having to align with my past. Part of that was I needed to shuck off. I needed to do a lot of shadow work. So I was doing a lot of shadow work within myself. You know, going through a divorce, that's hard. It's not a cakewalk, like as anyone knows who's been divorced. And then a lot of the family and friends stuff, going through hardship, it really shakes you up and shows you who you are. And going through that was incredible. It was an incredible experience to go through that burn it all down and rise again as the phoenix kind of moment. So that's the way I look at that. And a lot of that information that I gained in that experience, I've been able to use to help other people. So I come from a teaching background, and I've been able to use a lot of those hardships to help other people going through those things as well.
Well, that is why you're a teacher. I mean, that's why you're doing it, because you were able to go through that and, you know, bring that out to the world. So defined frequency now is about what? I mean, what's your topic that you really kind of focus on?
I swear I think I channeled that name because it means more and more to me every day. But I had this vision of this lotus flower. I was meditating one time. I had this vision of a lotus flower opening and closing. And then inside of the lotus flower was this, like, ground radar spinning around and, like, beaconing information out. What this told me as an archetype or a symbol was that we as souls are pulling in information all the time, and then we beacon out to the world. It's this exchange between the divine feminine, or bringing in the womb of creation, pulling in the information and then beaconing out the archetypal man, the divine masculine, the movement, the exchange. And this to me was this connection to the radar made me think of frequency, right? We are, we hold a frequency. Everything is frequency. And when we connect to that higher vibration, that divinity, it allows us to expand and evolve toward ascension.
Right. So tell us what is happening now. Where do you feel our frequency is? What does the future look like? I know you talk to a lot of millennials who are very open to this, and they don't really have a resource for this sort of education. So what does it look like? What's coming as you see it to the planet?
Well, I'm trying to get to the millennials. I feel like the millennials are – it's so important to get to them and the Gen Zers, and we're still trying to figure this out, because I think a lot of my generation and the younger ones, they're very, very caught up. They're products of a lot of mind control programming and a lot of psyops, so they're, unfortunately, they're still, a lot of them, I would say, have a lot, we've got a long way to go as a society.
Well, I think it's every generation. I mean, look at all the people that are mind controlled in other generations. I mean, they're maybe even more mind controlled because they didn't have the advantage of, like, the internet to open their mind. So I think, you know, there's more of a chance. Of course, people are still sucked in to the matrix, but there's more opportunity now to think for yourself than ever before. That's my feeling.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you on that, and let me make sure that I'm not misspeaking, because I do agree with what you're saying. I guess what I'm trying to say is, let me rephrase, because I do believe that my purpose, one of my purposes here on the planet, is to speak to the younger generations, and I'm still trying to figure out how to do that in the right way. And I think the best way to do it right now is to find ways to get, there's a lot of information out there. Like you said, we've got the internet that came out in the 90s. You know, that's the age of information. I believe we are in the age of disclosure. And that disclosure is the uncovering of what's hidden. And when we approach disclosure consciousness, meaning we can remain in an open state so we can lean into the information that all of the people in the past have worked tirelessly. My goodness, the research that's there, the groundwork is there. I'm so fortunate to be 30 years old living on the planet right now, because we have so much amazing information that's been given to us by the generations before us. Like, it gets me choked up thinking about it because I'm so grateful. And we need to take this seriously, and we need to find ways to be open so that we can expand with love. That's the most important thing. And when, go ahead.
No, I like where you're going. Go ahead.
I think that there's so much fear, and when we can strip that down and we can really start having conversations like you and I are having now, and having an open space to let people be heard, it's so important, because I think that a lot of people get triggered because they're so held on so tightly to their limiting belief systems that it's going to block them from being able to expand and see other truths. So I think something that's really important right now, and I do this through Divine Frequency. I do this through my other project, Stillness in the Storm. Those are the two alternative news media companies that I work with.
What is Stillness in the Storm? What does that mean? What is that about?
Stillness in the Storm is a website. It's stillnessinthestorm.com, and it's Justin Deschamps is the CEO. I'm the COO. We run it together with Sterling Nicole Bennett and a couple other people, and it's a news website that releases breaking alternative media news. And the idea behind it too is we're pumping out content, and then we do a news broadcast as well on Sundays. But we're trying to create a space, or we've created a space. It's there for 5 years. You can go on Facebook. There's a group too. We're building a community where people can have these conversations about topics when they're coming into the community, or maybe they're already there. We have a ton of people that are, you know, gurus on this stuff, I would say. You know, they've been in this awakening community for a while, and we're having conversations about all the information that's coming out. So it's so important to have that, yeah.
Oh, I should send you my paper I did on revisioning psychology, because psychology has been a great service for us, but it also kept us in a box thinking everything's psychological, and it doesn't let us expand into the parapsychological, the metapsychological realms. So
that sounds amazing.
We've been kept in fear of our own mind and our own potential by the psychological dogma. And we have to realize the value and the limitations of that. So, I understand what you're saying. Absolutely.
I love that. I would love for you to send that over. Yeah, I feel like we're coming together and we are in new ways leaning forward. To answer your question that you answered before, mm-hmm. I really do think that we're coming together as a community, bridging the gap. We are bridging that gap across all of the different generations online because we have the internet, but we're taking it out into the world in real life. People are coming to these conferences, and you're seeing a lot more people from the different generations. You know, there's going to be the Portal to Ascension conference in LA in October, so that's a great opportunity to come meet some of these people in person. But I think what's also happening is we're going to start taking this out into the communities in wherever you live. That's what I want to see, and I think that's definitely where we're headed.
Right. I think you're the spiritual aspect of a huge movement that's happening. Look at those students in Florida going to Tallahassee and then Washington, D.C. to talk about what really matters to them, to all of us, actually, about, you know, getting rid of gun violence. I mean, that's a sort of political aspect, but it affects people's lives, and it's about people speaking out for truth. And I think that's what you're doing. You're rallying forces for people to speak out for truth. And I think this is the age we're coming into now. And I think that's what Portal to Ascension is all about. How are we going to ascend out of the old frequency into the divine frequency? And this is the crossroads we're at now. And I think it's important we all speak up as much as possible. And everyone should come to the Portal to Ascension conference that is happening in October. You can go to portaltoascension.org and look at all the speakers that are coming there, and we'll be talking about the elevation of consciousness. So what do you, Teresa, see the possible world look like for you?
That's a great question. And to answer your question, I believe that the paradigm is shifting now. We are bringing the positive future into humanity now because people are waking up. They're leaning into their personal responsibility. We are connecting to our soul purpose within each and every one of us. People are realizing that they're powerful beings. They're going, wait a second, I do have a voice. I do have something to say. And people are leaning into that, and they're not taking no for an answer. They're letting go of whatever's holding them back, and they're going, how can I get involved? And a lot of this comes down to people are becoming more nurturing and accepting of other people. I see that happening, and I think that making sure that we're respecting other people on their own paths of evolution, that's going to help us get in line and shift this whole thing toward ascension. So we are nurturing and shepherding each other's souls. That's happening right now. And so we need to hold space for people to discover the path, and then we nurture that along as shepherds. So I think connecting to this concept. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
No, you've been connected. I finished that sentence. I'm just what were you saying? You've been connecting to this what?
Yeah, I think that connecting this all into the concept of oneness is the key.
Right.
And I think people are realizing that. So when we understand this concept that we are all one, we're all connected, everything we do affects the other because we're one, we start to understand our interconnectivity. So things like selfishness, things like envy, jealousy, these things are going to start ceasing to exist because we're going to be able to appreciate and feel compassion for each other, for one another, instead of feeling cut off or left out. So leaning into the concept of oneness is literally going to be our portal as a collective to ascension.
That's a great way of putting it. But what does ascension really look like to you? That's a question I like to ask.
It is. And I believe in, I guess I'm pretty grounded. I believe in active ascension. And so when I say that, I mean every single moment we need to be what I was raised with, rapture ready. We need to be ready. And what I mean by that is we need to sit in a space of disclosure consciousness at every single moment because ascension is happening now. We are in the process of ascending. You can either lean into it or you can detract from it. And so every single moment you need to be leaning forward so that all of us are leaning into each of our personal responsibilities to this so that we can evolve our consciousness into the next level.
But what is ascension? What is the essence of ascension that you are communicating? What does that mean?
Ascension to me is the evolution of consciousness on a collective level. So there are lots of different things that people believe about ascension. You know, I was raised Catholic, so if you look at the Bible, they say that, you know, people are going to be, basically, souls are going to be zapped up, right? There are lots of different ways to look.
I guess.
There's a lot of different ways to look at ascension, but I see it more like we are souls on this planet Earth. The Earth is ascending and growing and expanding as well because the Earth is a conscious being. We're moving forward in space, and we're moving into a space, we're in a space where our DNA is being activated. It's growing. We are expanding. So we need to lean into the vibration of love in order to catch that wave to be able to move forward as a collective, as our consciousness moves forward. It's all about movement. And where are we going? We're going back to source. We're going back to the source creator.
Right. And that's what you're really tuned into. And then when we're all back at the source creator, I know we have to wrap up, what will this have been all for?
It's funny, that's like a huge question. We could probably talk on for an hour. But I think the purpose of all of this is for the oneness to know itself. So we are creating data so that we are adding to the collective. So that's why our free will is so important, because we every moment choose what kind of data we're adding into that. So the oneness that we are, we're discovering the nature of our being. And
the
we get to decide what
being.
That being is. Yes.
Yes. My teacher, who was a great channel teacher, said, we're here to make known the unknown. Means that it's not just about returning to source. It's about cycling up to the next level of what we have yet to know, what we have yet to bring into the collective awareness. And that comes through artistic creation. And this is my interpretation. It comes through the arts, through creativity, through inspiration, through tapping into what has yet to be created. And that's the evolution. That's what I see as ascension, a society that is based on the value of creative input and the inventiveness of the human mind. So
absolutely. We are in the process of discovery. And something that I always have said my whole life is we need to learn to create more than we've learned to consume.
Yes, I totally agree with that. So let's start a company that we could
thank
do that.
Thank you so much, Ellen. This was really fun chatting with you today.
Thank you. Well, tell us a little bit about how to find you and all that.
I'm easy. You can go to thedivinefrequency.com and it's all there. You can get my book through there. You can check out alternative news media. You can check out my sessions. It's all there on my website. And I'm on YouTube.
I know. And I know you're speaking at the Portals Ascension Conference in October, but are you speaking anywhere else? Can people find you live somewhere?
Yes, I will